welcome to Elephate in the Room, Elephate's weekly podcast. I am your host, Derek Caraview. Today we're going to be talking to Tom Anthony, who started building websites 20 years ago and has been doing SEO for over 10. He is the VP product at Distilled, where he conceived of an SEO A/B testing platform and leads the team that built it and brought it to market. In December 2017, he defended his PhD thesis on a niche aspect of artificial intelligence. He does security research as a hobby and has been awarded a few bug bounties from Google. So today we're going to be talking to him through the normal steps. And to start, we're going to find out whether or not he believes that cereal is soup. So please grab yourself something to drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation with Tom Anthony. Dr. Tom Anthony. Before we kick things off, could you explain to our audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Tom Anthony, and I've been at Distilled for about 7 years, just over 7 years now. I joined Distilled in the consulting team, but for the last few years, three and a bit years, I've run the R&D team. And so nowadays, most of my time and effort goes on to building Distilled's software as a service platform to allow our clients and other websites to do A/B testing for SEO.
All right. So that's your main thing there, is at Distilled, correct?
Yeah, that's my day-to-day job. For the last few years, on top of that, I've been trying to finish off my PhD on the side, which I've actually finished a few weeks back now. So Finally got that done after 10 years. So nowadays, just Distilled is my sole focus.
All right, great. So we'll get to the PhD stuff in a bit. And we're going to go ahead and get started here. So our first question for today is cereal soup?
Is cereal soup? This is a very... I was warned that there's going to be some strange questions, but I wasn't ready for how strange. Cereal is definitely not soup. There's no argument about this. 100%.
Okay, so 100%. You're sure? You're ready to live with that for the rest of your life, that cereal is not soup?
Well, you're making me start to doubt myself now, because, you know, if you start to break it down, it becomes a difficult one. A few years ago, I gave a presentation at Brighton SEO called How to Spot a Bear. And it was about, basically, it's much more difficult for us as humans to write rules for things than we think. Mm-hmm. It was about machine learning. But if you try to give a list of attributes of a bear, of how someone should spot a bear, you say, oh, it's big and furry and it's got four legs. It could be a dog, it could be a wolf, it could be a lion, it could be all sorts of things. And it becomes difficult to make a hard and fast list. And I think the same is true for cereal and soup. It's hard to define why cereal is not soup.
But you got to go with your gut on that one. Okay. All right. What is your computer wallpaper?
My computer wallpaper is... depends on how many monitors I got plugged in at any time. It's either the default one in macOS, or it's a picture of my kids. I have two daughters, and so it might be a picture of them at any particular time.
All right. Yep, that's always a good one. I think my main screen is my son, and the backup screen is my daughter. So I'm with you on that one.
Oh, is that a ranking system?
He's older, so he's been around, you know, longer. So, you know, got dibs. So.
Yeah, I try to on my phone, I have the same, but it's normally just one of them, and I have to make sure I alternate it at a good frequency so I don't get in trouble.
Yeah. So my youngest is a little too young to catch on just yet. I'll have to worry about that in another couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. What is the weirdest thing you have seen in someone else's home?
Oh, wow. Well, I've got to be careful here. I don't want to end up in court. The weirdest thing that I've seen in someone else's home. I've seen a variety of odd things. One thing that comes to mind was a friend of mine, and this is some years ago, it was like 2004, who had a toilet seat that was like from the future, I think they're fairly popular in Japan now, but it was basically, it could heat up the toilets, it could play music so people couldn't hear you when you're in the toilet, and it could spray water at you from all sorts of directions, and it even had a built-in fan for drying your bum right there on the toilet, so you didn't need to do anything, you just pressed the buttons, but the buttons were quite confusing. I got myself in trouble a few times. You got to test these things out. You got to try out these technologies.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, if you have the opportunity, you got to go for it. There, I understand that. So, you know,
yeah, it had female only functions. I tried those too as well. I'm going to advise against it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. So the old curiosity.
You've got to find the limits.
Yeah. Certainly, you get to put together the ultimate rock band. Who do you choose for each? Who's your singer, your guitar player, your bass player, and your drummer?
I'll just take the Rolling Stones. Just take the Rolling Stones. It's fine. I don't need to do anything else. I'm definitely not going to be in it. And then I'm just going to import the Rolling Stones. My wife's going to be upset that I haven't said something about the Queens of the Stone Age. But no, I'm old school. I like the Rolling Stones. They're classic. So I still listen to the Rolling Stones. The best concerts I've ever been to have been the Rolling Stones. I'm not a huge music fan, but I love the Rolling Stones. I also love Celine Dion, which I get a lot of grief about. So,
all right, what's your favorite Stone song?
Probably Start Me Up. It's quite good for getting yourself started up. I went on a run earlier this week, and that was one of the early songs that came on, and it was great because it just got me pumped up. It's a great song.
Yeah, I know for a long time you'd hear that at the beginning of like football games and stuff in the States, that there was a couple of teams that would do that. So before the opening kickoff for American football, let's say, that they would play that, get the crowd going.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
If you were arrested with no explanation, what would your friends and family assume you had done?
There's different ways to answer this. But I'll stick with the politically safe thing. They're probably gonna assume, well, one of two things. I'm gonna stick with one answer. They're probably gonna assume that I've been hacking something.
Mm-hmm.
I did previously get in a little bit of trouble with the police, and I spoke about this at a conference recently for hacking. I managed to weasel my way out of it. So that's the only time I've really got in trouble with the police about anything. And so that's definitely what everybody's going to assume.
Okay. So that's that you've gone to the black hat ways and gotten yourself in trouble.
Yeah. I'll probably, you know, nowadays I still do a little bit of hacking here and there. I've got a few security bounties paid to me from Google over time. And I got one from Facebook recently, which I'm not allowed to talk about what I did to them yet. But so they've paid me to doing the white hat type thing. But at times it is hard to like control the urge to turn to the dark side and just get carried away. Yeah.
You have to delete all but three apps from your phone. Which ones do you keep?
You're making me sweat just thinking about that. Okay. I'm trying to think like whether I want to delete the things that stop me working or like keep the stuff that I can work. I'm definitely going to need the Maps app because I'm not very good at directions.
Yeah,
I get lost fairly easily. Probably going to take the Messages app so that, you know, my wife can tell me what to buy on the way home. Then I want to say like a browser, but I don't know. Maybe not being able to browse would be a good thing because it's a bad habit that you get into. So I might keep one of my games. So yeah, Maps, Messages, and my favorite game.
Okay, what's your favorite game at the moment?
It's called Color Code. It's based on this really old game. I think it was called Mastermind or something. Basically, you've got like a color sequence of four different color pegs, and you have to work out what the sequence is. And so you can guess, so you can put in like, oh, blue, blue, red, green, and it'll tell you, oh, you've got two of those right, but they're in the wrong, two of the colors are right, but they're in the wrong position. And through like trial and error, you have to work out what the right code is. It's a very geeky game.
No, that sounds kind of like Yeah, there was a game we played as kids called Simon. You just had to follow the pattern. You didn't have to guess the pattern, but
Yeah, no, I know that. Like following the pattern. Yeah, it's similar to like the ones where my daughter likes to play one where you pack the suitcase and you have to remember like what everyone's packed into the suitcase, or like packing in some sunglasses, and then you have to pack in something, and it goes back and forth until someone can't remember everything that's in the suitcase.
yeah. That sounds like fun. I have to try that one out with the kids.
Terrible against a 6-year-old because they still got compliant memories that just like suck up all this stuff. So I've never won, I don't think.
So if you weren't doing what you do, what would you be doing?
This is an interesting one. So, two things spring to mind. One is like doing security research, so like hacker for hire. I do that as a hobby, but doing it full time could be fun. The other, maybe being a doctor, because I like the idea of being a doctor where you can help people with whatever it is that, but it's also intellectually stimulating, so you've got to work out, and it's a bit like being a computer scientist where you've got like a something you need to debug, like okay, there's these symptoms, what could the explanation be?
All right, so you could be a different kind of doctor.
A different kind of doctor, yeah. Although a lot of people know me would probably be terrified by the prospect of me being a doctor. But
So tell us a little bit more about the work that you do at Distilled. You mentioned, and I've seen from just various things doing some research that you've been there for a long time, but it was mainly as what's the word I'm looking for here? Where you didn't work there full time. You were more of a consultant, right?
So I was full-time Distilled guy, but in the consulting team, we got a large consulting team at Distilled focusing like, well, full digital marketing, but my focus was definitely on the sort of technical SEO side of things. But one of the, like, over the sort of time I was working in the consulting side of stuff, basically I started to get frustrated with things. One big frustration was that we'd be making a lot of recommendations to clients, but often they struggled to actually turn those into reality. And so we could be delivering reports, that's great, but unless you're actually, we say it internally, unless you're affecting change, unless you're actually getting them to do something, then you're not being a productive consultant. But it became very frustrating for me that often like technological restraints would stop them being able to make the changes that we were recommending to their sites. And then secondly, I also thought that there was a lot of time being spent in Microsoft Excel with people crunching data. And it struck me as massively inefficient because we've got a really smart consulting team. And anytime anybody is doing some sort of repetitive task or crunching data manually, and it's taking them a few days to process all this data, that just struck me as a waste of our resource. So I pitched internally that we should start a research and development team at the company, focusing on trying to solve some of these problems, make us more efficient, allow our consultants to be using their brains for stuff that computers couldn't do. I pitched it a few times and got turned down, and I think eventually they just got bored of me pitching this, and they said, "Okay, Tom, you go and sit in the corner, and you're the R&D team now." And it was just me on my own to begin with, and I made a whole bunch of sort of internal tools that we used with various things. I made tools that like allowed you to like manipulate link data en masse, so you could download sort of hundreds of megabytes of link data from Majestic, from Ahrefs. You could download data from Search Console. And then this tool would basically allow you to sort of filter and collate all of that information, turn it into disavow files, run disavow files against the links, all sorts of stuff, basically just trying to make us more efficient. But one of the products that really came out of all the sort of various things we tried was the what turned into our sole focus now, which is the Distilled ODM platform, which is our platform that allows clients to do A/B testing for SEO. And so that's one side of the platform. The other side of the platform is it just allows clients to make changes to their websites, which sounds really simple and dumb, but when you're working with enterprise clients, large clients, often they struggle because of technological restraints. Mm-hmm. They might be on a legacy platform to make certain changes. And this is the frustration I had as a consultant. You say, oh, we should be adding some structured data to these pages, or we want to change the breadcrumbs, whatever it might be, and they just can't get those changes made. So what the platform that we've created does is it sits in front of their web server, it's invisible to users, but it allows us to make changes to their HTML in an unconstrained way, because the platform is actually manipulating the HTML directly. So if you want to add structured markup, you can add structured markup. If you want to remove parts of content or add new content to these pages, it can do all of that at scale. So you can roll out structured markup to millions of product pages in one go. And then, as I said, as well as making those changes, you can also split test them. So you can say, okay, you guys have got 1,000 product pages, and you want to know what would happen if you had this new title format. And so what we can do is we can roll out the new title format you're interested in to 500 of those product pages. Now we've got two groups of 500 product pages. They're all on the same template. They have similar content. So the only difference between these two groups of pages is this title format. And now we can start to measure how much traffic do each of those two groups get from organic search from Google. And we can work out whether the new title format's having a positive or negative effect, measure that exactly, which from my perspective as an SEO is really exciting, because historically we've not been able to measure what the impact of our efforts have been. And now we can do that in a sort of very precise way. Okay, these new titles are going to get you a 4.6% uplift in traffic or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, nowadays that platform is pretty much the sole focus of the R&D team at this deal.
Okay. So the people who had originally turned down your pitch for this, they've all been fired, right? Is that what you're telling me?
They wouldn't fired any of them. Something to do with them being founders and everything.
Oh, right. Never mind.
Well, and when I originally pitched, I pitched the R&D team with a few product ideas, but the ODN platform wasn't in the original pitch. But later on, we had the idea. I had this plan for building this thing. And by this point, there was a couple of us on the R&D team, so we started building it. And to be honest, had we understood what we were getting ourselves into, we might have thought twice about building such a sort of large-scale platform. But nowadays, there's five of us on the team at the moment, and it's grown into this big thing. So we're very happy that we did push forward with it. But.
Oh, well, good. It's always nice when you can come up with something and it works, like you said, even better than you probably had initially perceived it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the concept of split testing for SEO was foreign to most people, so it's taken us a while to sort of educate the industry, if you will. There are companies that we know have been doing split testing for a while. Some have written blog posts about it. Pinterest, Etsy, Thumbtack have all written blog posts about their internal split testing efforts, but nobody's had a platform for doing this, so it hasn't been a lot of awareness. But I think in the last sort of, certainly in the last year, we've sort of turned a corner where more and more people are becoming aware that you can do this sort of data-driven approach to SEO. People are very, very sort of excited about it now, so we're getting more and more interest. So as you said, yeah, you have an idea, and when it turns out to actually to be valuable to someone, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, but yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to our next game, which is a nice little game of Would You Rather?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I'm going to present you with some choices. You tell me which one you would prefer. Would you rather go vegan or only eat meat for the rest of your life?
Definitely go vegan. Otherwise, I'll be dead in about 5 years from a heart attack.
Yeah, scurvy. I think scurvy would take you out even quicker, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Scurvy and a heart attack. I'll race you. We'll see what happens. I am a meat eater, but I am trying to cut down the amount of meat I eat also for the planet. So vegan,
sure,
definitely vegan.
Okay. Would you rather jump into your body 20 years ago with everything you know now, or see the future to see how your kids turn out?
Oh, you gave me the first option there, and I was like, I can't imagine what the second option is going to be, but the first option sounds pretty fantastic. But then the second option trumped it, because I've always been fascinated. I would love to be able to see like the future of humanity, and seeing like the future for my kids would be pretty amazing, especially seeing the world they live in with mm-hmm. all the technologies and things like artificial intelligence and how they're going to change the world. But it'd also be a little bit scary seeing the future for your own kids, because if everything's not rosy, you might struggle. But it depends. Like, am I allowed, if I see the future, can I then change the future by acting differently?
I think the idea is you get to see it. So the first option, you get to go and relive everything. You know, you're 20 years younger, but with all that knowledge. But in the future, you're just there. You're kind of an observer.
Yeah, so I dream about the like idea of being able to go back to being young with my knowledge now, because you could have a great time in so many ways. Yeah, and you would change the world. But at the same time, being able to see the future would be pretty great. But if I can't control the future, then and it's got my kids in it, then I might worry that if things aren't rosy, if things look like they're suffering in some way, I wouldn't want to know that if you're powerless to help. So I'm going to go back 20 years into my old body with everything I know now.
All right. Good one. All right. So I've read that you're a bit of a poker player. So you're at the final table. Would you rather play against a pro that you understand or a lucky rookie?
I think if it's down to the two of us, I'm going to take the lucky rookie, because a pro is just going to grind you down bit by bit. Whereas the lucky rookie, they've got luck on their sides, but you've got like skill and knowledge. And so in general, I would take skill and knowledge over luck. And so if I want to, you know, I'm going to play them against each other, I'm going to take the lucky rookie, because I reckon he might be lucky, but I can limit the impact of his luck. Whereas the pro is just going to do the same thing to me, just grind me down. So lucky rookie.
Okay, good one. Would you rather be the funniest or the smartest person in the room?
I'm usually both, aren't I? If I had to choose between the two of them, I'd go smartest. But my preference would be a happy balance between the two. But if I'm going to be forced to choose, then smartest.
Okay, yeah. For me, I think it would have to depend on the room. Where, yeah, what's going on?
That's also true. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're at work, you want to be the smartest, but if you're at the party, maybe you want to be the funniest. So,
yeah, if you could change it, then yeah, that'd be good. You have to pick whom you're going into, whether you're going to be lucky or smart, or funny or smart. Yeah. Okay. I can understand that.
Okay. Would you rather have all the pictures that you take come out a little bit blurry, or a little bit skewed?
Definitely a little bit skewed. I take them a little bit skewed anyway for artistic effect, so that'd be no different now. And my wife's got used to straightening them up anyway, so that'd be fine.
All right, you guys already have a system. Okay.
Yeah, we got it.
All right, and our final would you rather question. Would you rather eat with your mouth open all the time, or make loud noises every time you take a bite of food?
Yeah, I'm going to go every time I take a bite. After careful consideration.
Okay. All right. So now this is something you had brought up at the beginning here. I want to talk a little bit about, you said not too long ago you obtained your PhD after nearly a decade worth of work.
Yeah.
And I know that it's in a niche part of AI. What can you tell us about this PhD?
Sure. So, yeah, as you said, it was a long time coming. I'd done most of the work before, most of the research and the publications I'd done before I started at Distilled. But then I started at Distilled when I knew I was becoming a father, and I'd already been sort of 3 and a bit years into the PhD, but then it took a long time to finish off. Mm-hmm. But as you said, the PhD's in a sort of niche. Most PhDs are a niche part of whatever they are. They're sort of small building blocks in sort of this huge wall of science. And so it was specifically what we might call artificial life. So it was about trying to understand how the main goal of AI is making computers that are capable of, you might say, capable of thinking like humans and eventually outsmarting us. And nowadays in the industry, we get very excited about machine learning because that's part of the wider research that is AI. But machine learning is designed to solve very specific problems. The machine learning algorithm that powers Google Translate is not very good at recognizing faces and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So the sort of original, earlier, broader goals of AI were about trying to make computers that could think like humans. And we have early successes with things like chess, where they could beat humans at chess, but once again, that computer couldn't play any other game. So my research was involved in trying to go back to what could we do in order to try to simulate some parts of sort of more human-like intelligence, in that humans can do fairly sensible things even in scenarios they've not encountered before. And in scenarios they've not encountered before, they can work out a sensible strategy of what they need to do. So if I sat you down at a game of Pac-Man and I didn't explain how Pac-Man works, but you saw these ghosts running towards you, you'd probably work out, okay, I'm going to run away from them because you want to survive. You don't know that they're going to kill you necessarily, but you want to control what's going on in the world. And so my research was around basically trying to take that sort of concept of control. So I developed a sort of set of algorithms that essentially allow computers, or the aim was to allow computers to come up with sensible strategies even when they're not told what to do. So in the example of Google Translate or chess, we've given the computers very explicit goals. My research was revolved around what happens when we take away the goals. We don't have any goals. And so I tried out all sorts of scenarios. I tried out the Pac-Man scenario. I tried out scenarios where there's an old computer game called Soccer Ban, where you're in a maze and you have to push the boxes around the maze to get them out of places. I tried those sorts of scenarios and basically helped develop as part of a wider team a system where it seemed to make fairly intuitive choices about and act in a sort of human-like way, if you will, in that in Pac-Man it didn't understand what the game was, but it ran away from the ghosts, and in the box world it decided it had never been told what the puzzle was or anything, but it would solve the puzzle of bringing this box out of the maze and bringing it into the main room. And all of this was motivated by the idea of the computer's trying to keep its options open, which is something that humans try to do. We try to get more money because it gives us more options. We try to get more power and status because it gives us more options. It gives us more control over the world. And that's basically what was motivated by my that was the motivation for my research, was to try to like give that ability to computers, but done so in a sort of mathematically precise way so that we could poke it and prod it and understand why is it acting in a certain way. And so, yeah.
All right, now when you deal with a subject such as this, because it's something that I think obviously a lot of people are interested in it, even if just from, let's say, wishes and dreams kind of a aspect, you know, we all hope that there's going to be some kind of breakthrough that's going to lead to, you know, just like great things we can't even think about yet. To obviously, you know, big, huge companies who are hoping to monetize that. So when you're dealing with a PhD in this particular subject, but one that, again, took you so long to complete, were you worried about something, let's say, catching up to your or surpassing your research before you got to do anything with it? Or is it because this is such a big, large and complex problem, you didn't feel too worried about that?
It's a good question. I wasn't too stressed about it. A lot of the sort of private companies and research, a lot of the research they do are motivated by specific goals. The nice thing about the academic world is that you don't have to be motivated by specific goals, and there's no pressure to monetize it. And so it allows you to sort of explore concepts that might not be so easily explored in sort of the private space. But it's also, especially when you've taken so long to complete the research, sort of always a concern, like, oh, someone else could come along and do this. But the thing is, like, it's such a huge broad space, but and also there's so many people doing very similar threads of research, but coming at it from a different angle. And that's the great thing about science. Like, there's all these different people who are in some way competing with one another, but another way, we're all aiming towards the same thing. And hopefully, one of the threads of these sort of hundreds of people trying out different approaches, one of those will prove to be fruitful, and then everybody will start sort of digging deeper into that, and thus goes the cycle. No, so I wasn't too stressed about it. My supervisor was starting to get a little bit stressed when he saw other people referencing some of the work we had done and starting to sort of dig into it more. But as it turns out, nobody did sort of tread on my toes.
Okay, and now the research that you've done, and now that you've completed this, have you been able to utilize anything that you've done there to help with your job now, or are those two just two very separate things for you?
Two very separate things. I mean, the biggest thing I have utilized is just the methodology of how to go about doing research, how to sort of work through all of the different options. You're presented with lots of different options. You need to work out, okay, this thing's worth pursuing, that thing isn't, and how to think creatively to solutions to problems. But the actual research itself, I've not utilized at all in my day-to-day job. No, completely separate
Okay.
though.
And one last question before we get to the lightning round. When you make, let's say, dinner reservations, do you make reservations now as Dr. Tom Anthony, hoping to get like a better table?
So far, I've not used my doctor title at all. It's been a few months since I could do that, and I haven't been able to bring myself to tick the doctor box on like the name and address form, or and I've not used it in any way whatsoever. I did bump into someone recently who asked me the same question. So now, are you using it at all? And I said, oh no, you gotta be, you potentially sound like a bit of an idiot if you start using it. And then they told me that they had brought an online doctorate just so that they could try to game the system by sounding important. I don't think I'm gonna be able to do that. I'm waiting for the point where, like, I book for a plane ticket and I put doctor, and then they do the whole, is there a doctor on board? Yeah, sure. Is your laptop broken? Let me have a look at it. Oh, you're having a heart attack. Sorry.
Okay. Well, in light of that, we're going to go ahead and go on to the Elephate Lightning Round. You'll have two choices. You get to choose one. If you would like to talk a little bit more about that, great. If not, we go right on to the next one. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Our first question in the Elephate Lightning Round, Dr. Seuss or Dr. Dre?
Dr. Seuss, go.
Okay. In light of your research, AI or iRobot?
AI.
Doctor Strange or Doctor Doom?
Dr. Doom.
Tom Hanks or Tom Hardy?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Lightning round pressure. Tom Hanks.
Doctor
That's a tough.
Martens or, oh, sorry, one more time.
I was just gonna say that's a tough one. What I'd like to see is them swap places, like get a film reshot, but where they've swapped places, like Tom Hanks playing Bane in Batman.
Yeah.
That would be good. That's what I want.
I say that
a
would
bit
be
of.
terrible, but I would go see that.
Yeah, wouldn't you? Tom Hardy as Forrest Gump, just beating the shit out of people.
Again, terrible, but I would go see that.
Oh, there you go.
It's like they have the same career. It's weird. Dr. Martens or Dr. Scholl's?
Martins.
Anthony Hopkins or Anthony Perkins?
Hopkins.
Doctor Who or Doctor House?
Ooh, Dr. House. But yeah, my wife and I might argue about that one. Dr. House.
Doctor House. All right. Enter the Dragon or Fist of Fury?
Ooh. Enter the Dragon. That's a tough one.
All right, because now you do that particular style of martial arts that was started by Bruce Lee. Is that correct?
I haven't done for a few years, but I did for about 5 years. Yeah, Jeet Kune Do. So yeah, so that's why it was a tough one. And that, I did it before like MMA really got big, because it was like the father of MMA, if you will. Bruce Lee, they took the strongest parts from various different martial arts, and it's like, you should use these, whatever's working for you, and blend them all together, which was quite a novel concept at the time. So I should try to get back into that. That was good fun. But at the same time, if you do it competitively, you also spend your weekends very bruised and bloodied. So there's downsides to it. So
I'd say my wife recently started taking Krav Maga classes. Yeah, so she comes home with like bruises and stuff, and so and we have a 1 year old who bites her at times. So I can't tell people think that she's experiencing violence at home or that we're very kinky. So it's been very
people are looking at you strangely, judgmentally. Yeah,
Bizarro or Brainiac?
Brainiac.
Texas Hold'em or 7-card stud?
Texas Hold'em. Has anyone ever chosen 7-card stud?
I asked this one specifically for you, but we'll see. I'll ask it again for maybe other people. See what we get. Mars Bar or Curly Whirly?
Curly Whirly.
That's not one we get in the States. And a friend of mine is from Birmingham, and he brought some Curly Whirlies home. They were pretty good.
They're pretty amazing, man. All chewy in your mouth. That's pretty. Yeah, they're pretty good. Especially if you put them in the fridge first.
Yeah. Intelligent personal assistant or India pale ale?
Ooh, both. Definitely both. I like both of those things a lot. I don't know if I'm choosing for right now my life, like rest of my life. Right now, I'll take the pale ale. I'll take a beer, but
yeah.
Like the room question, it depends on the scenario.
Because I saw you you wrote something about maybe 2 years ago talking about intelligent personal assistants and how those were going to be like part of the future of computing or whatever. Do you still feel the same about that?
It's a really interesting one. One of the founders of Distilled, Will Critchlow, just wrote a blog post recently talking about voice search and how everybody's talking about it, but it still is a sort of drop in the bucket in terms of the number of searches. But at the same time, I can't escape the sort of sensation that it is changing the way that people run searches. Nowadays, recently, I bumped into like a great auntie of mine who must be going on 90, and she had just got an Alexa, and she's asking us Alexa questions. And it's just a paradigm shift in how we interact with this sort of the web, this huge corpus of knowledge. And you've got kids like my daughters are 4 and 6, and they interact with Alexa, asking it sort of questions that they want to know the answers to, asking about the weather for a certain day. And they also do it in a very sort of, they treat it like a person. They say please and everything. And so it's just a fascinating change. How the web works. So huge, but it's also not having a big impact on companies who are making money online, I don't think. So it'll be an exciting few years to see what happens.
Yeah, certainly. It's then and going kind of back to, I'm assuming at least in a tenuous way back to your PhD work, which is this idea of artificial intelligence. And I was in the States over Christmas, and my parents have Alexa.
Yeah,
and so my son is he's about 4 and a half, and so he primarily speaks Polish, because we live in Poland, and so it was funny because I'm seeing him interact with Alexa, trying to get her, and she didn't quite understand him because his English was a little bit accented, and he's a kid, and basically he just wanted Alexa to make animal noises. So that was, you wanted to hear a horse, you wanted to hear a donkey, this kind of thing. So that's, that was pretty much all he was asking, but he was fascinated. And now anything, when we first got back, cause we don't have it here, personally don't have it. And anything that looked remotely like a speaker, he would start talking to it.
That's fascinating.
Calling it Alexa. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Something he had access to for just a couple of weeks. And then, for months afterwards, anything that looked anywhere close to the same, he would try to get it to make dog noises for him.
Kids adapt quickly. Yeah, you can make the Alexa do, like, you can put it into, like, you can install this meow app on it, and so it just starts meowing. But even when you it'll meow for a while, but then you ask it another follow up question, and it'll just meow at you again, and it's still in meow mode. And my kids love doing that. My wife was a little bit worried. We have two Alexas now, one upstairs and one downstairs. My wife was a little bit concerned initially when we first got them about having this something in our house that's listening the whole time. Mm-hmm. She grew up her first few years in East Germany. She's German, and they reunified, but so she grew up in the world of the Stasi, where there's people trying to listen to you all the time.
Sure.
And she was like, we're gonna put this thing in our house. But she loves it now, like, because it just makes that access to that information so easy, as you say.
Yeah, my sister refuses to get one. She just and didn't grow up in East Germany, you know, grew up in America. So she just refuses, to thinks that it's no good can come of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. It's an interesting one. It's quite this sort of divisive, but at the same time, I think it'll just become more and more normalized, because it's also quite illogical, because people have smartphones sat around in their kitchens, and the smartphone is also an internet device with a microphone that can also listen to you.
Sure.
if someone hacked it. So it's just I think it's a conceptual difference that worries people, but it's very interesting.
We'll see. I don't know if maybe she's changed her mind on that, but so I think of her when I see the that meme where it's, you know, back in the 60s, it's like, oh no, the government may be spying on, or, you know, we're being wiretapped. And then, you know, today it's like, hey, wiretap, how do you make pancakes? You know, that kind of thing. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've not seen that, but I can understand that. Yeah, it's funny. You should definitely get one. Now that your son's going to use it, you should definitely get one. They don't speak Polish yet.
All right, and our final lightning round question, and this is obviously for the British person here. Either you have to jump in the queue or bump into somebody and not say sorry.
God, now I'm really sweating. If I wasn't sweating earlier, those are two impossible choices. You know, I don't know. Like, the Britishness in me is overwhelmed right now. I'm gonna say,
if you need to have a cup of tea and calm down, then that's fine.
I'm gonna say bump into somebody, and I'd love a cup of tea right now, actually. I'm gonna say bump into somebody and not say sorry, because the initial action was accidental, whereas the jumping in the queue, that's just, if that's purposeful, that's outrageous behavior. But I'm married to a German, so I mean, they don't respect queuing very much over there. So if ever in that scenario, I send my wife in, she's all elbows, and I'll just be at the front of the queue quickly. So I hope she doesn't listen.
Hopefully the wiretap doesn't tell her what you said.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So, thank you very much for that. That was the end of the lightning round. You survived. Before we go, do you have any final thoughts? Is there anything that you would like to promote, to let our listeners know about? Anything to share here?
So in terms of promotion, we already talked about it a little bit, the platform I work on. I'm imagining a lot of your listeners are in the SEO world, and obviously the platform is, I'm biased, but the Distilled ODN platform, if you haven't checked it out, definitely go and have a look at it. Just distilledodn.com, ODN for Optimization Delivery Network. And if you're working on any sort of large scale site, then it's opening up a whole new way to do SEO, which, from being as sort of subjective as I can, is an exciting way to do SEO, just because it's the first time we've been able to have a sort of data driven approach, which was the whole motivation for it in the first place. So definitely go and check that out.
Okay. And that is found at what, distilled.net. Is that correct?
You can either go to distilled.net, or you can just go to distilledodn.com. And there's a separate website there for the platform.
Terrific. Okay. So Tom, Dr. Anthony, thank you very much for joining us today. We do appreciate having you on the show.
Derek, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed the off-the-ball questions a lot.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Caraview, produced by Christian A. Dumais. Music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon.
This podcast is a part of Elevate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elevate on Twitter at Elevate SEO and on Facebook at Elevate. Thanks for joining us and see you next time.